could stand it no longer. He got up and looked round. It was chilly, and he wrapped his cloak about him. The moon was shining cold and white, down into the dell, and the shadows of the bushes were black. All about lay sleeping shapes. The two guards were not in view. They were up on the hill, perhaps, or hidden in the bracken. Driven by some impulse that he did not understand, Pippin walked softly to where Gandalf lay. He looked down at him. The wizard seemed asleep, but with lids not fully closed. There was a glitter of eyes under his long lashes. Pippin stepped back hastily, but Gandalf made no sign, and drawn forward once more, half against his will, the hobbit crept up again from behind the wizard's head. He was rolled in a blanket, with his cloak spread over the top and close beside him. Between his right side and his bent arm there was a hummock, something round wrapped in a dark cloth. His hand seemed only just to have slipped off it to the ground. Hardly breathing, Pippin crept nearer, foot by foot. At last he knelt down. Then he put his hands out stealthily and slowly lifted the lump up. It didn't seem quite so heavy as he'd expected. "Only some bundle of oddments, perhaps, after all," he thought with a strange sense of relief. But he didn't put the bundle down again. He stood for a moment clasping it. Then an idea came into his mind. He tiptoed away, found a large stone, and came back. Quickly now he drew off the cloth, wrapped the stone in it, and, kneeling down, laid it back by the wizard's hand. Then at last he looked at the thing that he had uncovered. There it was, a smooth globe of crystal, now dark and dead, lying bare before his knees. Pippin lifted it, covered it hurriedly in his own cloak, and half turned to go back to his bed. At that moment Gandalf moved in his sleep, and muttered some words. They seemed to be in a strange tongue. His hand groped out and clasped the wrapped stone, then he sighed and did not move again. "You idiotic fool," Pippin muttered to himself. "You're going to get yourself into frightful trouble. Put it back quick." But he found now that his knees quaked, and he didn't dare to go near enough to the wizard to reach the bundle. "I'll never get it back now without waking him," he thought. "Not till I'm a bit calmer. So I may as well have a look first. Not just here, though." He stole away and sat down on a green hillock not far from his bed. The moon looked in over the edge of the dell. Pippin sat with his knees drawn up and the ball between them. He bent low over it, looking like a greedy child stooped over a bowl of food in a corner away from others. He drew his cloak aside and gazed at it. The air seemed still and tense about him. At first the globe was dark, black as jet, with a moonlight gleaming on its surface. Then there came a faint glow and stir in the heart of it, and it held his eyes, so that now he could not look away. Soon all the inside seemed on fire, the ball was spinning, or the lights within were revolving. Suddenly the lights went out. He gave a gasp and struggled, but he remained bent, clasping the ball with both hands. Closer and closer he bent, and then became rigid. His lips moved soundlessly for a while. Then with a strangled cry he fell back and lay still. The cry was piercing. The guards leapt down from the banks. All the camp was soon astir.
"So this is the thief," said Gandalf.
Hastily he cast his cloak over the globe where it lay.
"But you, Pippin, this is a grievous turn to things."
He knelt by Pippin's body. The hobbit was lying on his back, rigid, with unseeing eyes staring up at the sky.
"The devilry! What mischief has he done, to himself and to all of us?"
The wizard's face was drawn and haggard. He took Pippin's hand and bent over his face, listening for his breath. Then he laid his hands on his brow. The hobbit shuddered. His eyes closed. He cried out and sat up, staring in bewilderment at all the faces round him, pale in the moonlight.
"It's not for you, Saruman,"
he cried in a shrill and toneless voice, shrinking away from Gandalf.
"I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that."
Then he struggled to get up and escape, but Gandalf held him gently and firmly.
"Peregrin took," he said. "Come back."
The hobbit relaxed and fell back. clinging to the wizard's hand.
"Gandalf," he cried, "Gandalf, forgive me."
"Forgive you?" said the wizard. "Tell me first what you've done."
I took the ball and looked at it," stammered Pippin, "and I saw things that frightened me, and I wanted to go away, but I couldn't. And then he came and questioned me, and he looked at me, and that is all I remember."
"That won't do," said Gandalf sternly. "What did you see, and what did you say?"
Pippin shut his eyes and shivered, but said nothing. They all stared at him in silence, except Merry, who turned away. But Gandalf's face was still hard.
"Speak," he said. In a low, hesitating voice, Pippin began again, and slowly his words grew clearer and stronger.
"I saw a dark sky, and tall battlements," he said, "and tiny stars. It seemed very far away and long ago, yet hard and clear. Then the stars went in and out. They were cut off by things with wings, very big, I think, really. But in the glass they looked like bats wheeling round the tower. I thought there were 9 of them. One began to fly straight towards me, getting bigger and bigger. It had a horrible... No, I can't say. I tried to get away, because I thought it would fly out. But when it had covered all the globe, it disappeared. Then he came.
He didn't speak so that I could hear words. He just looked, and I understood." "So you have come back. Why have you neglected to report for so long?"
"I didn't answer."
"He said, 'Who are you?'"
"I still didn't answer, but it hurt me horribly. And he pressed me, so I said, 'A hobbit.' Then suddenly he seemed to see me, and he laughed at me. It was cruel. It was like being stabbed with knives. I struggled, but he said,
'Wait a moment. We shall meet again soon. Tell Saruman that this dainty is not for him. I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that.'
Then he gloated over me. I felt I was falling to pieces. No, I can't say any more. I don't remember anything else."
"Look at me," said Gandalf.
Pippin looked up straight into his eyes. The wizard held his gaze for a moment in silence. Then his face grew gentler, and the shadow of a smile appeared. He laid his hand softly on Pippin's head.
"All right," he said. "Say no more. You've taken no harm. There's no lie in your eyes, as I feared. But he didn't speak long with you. A fool, but an honest man, you remain, Peregrin Took. Wiser ones might have done worse in such a pass. But mark this. You've been saved, and all your friends too, mainly by good fortune, as it's called. You can't count on it a second time. If he'd questioned you, then and there, almost certainly you would have told all that you know, to the ruin of us all. But he was too eager. He didn't want information only. He wanted you, quickly, so that he could deal with you in the Dark Tower, slowly. Don't shudder. If you will meddle in the affairs of wizards, you must be prepared to think of such things. But come, I forgive you. Be comforted. Things have not turned out as evilly as they might." He lifted Pippin gently and carried him back to his bed. Merry followed and sat beside him. "Lie there and rest if you can, Pippin," said Gandalf. "Trust me, if you feel an itch in your palms again, tell me of it. Such things can be cured. But anyway, my dear hobbit, don't put a lump of rock under my elbow again. Now I'll leave you two together for a while."
With that, Gandalf returned to the others, who were still standing by the Orthanc stone in troubled thought.
"Peril comes in the night when least expected," he said. "We've had a narrow escape." "How is the hobbit, Pippin?" asked Aragorn. "I think all will be well now," answered Gandalf. "He was not held long, and hobbits have an amazing power of recovery. The memory, or the horror of it, will probably fade quickly, too quickly, perhaps. Will you, Aragorn, take the Orthanc stone and guard it? It's a dangerous charge."
"Dangerous indeed, but not to all," said Aragorn. "There's one who may claim it by right. For this assuredly is the Palantir of Orthanc, from the treasury of Elendil, set here by the kings of Gondor. Now my hour draws near. I will take it."
Gandalf looked at Aragorn, and then, to the surprise of the others, he lifted the covered stone and bowed as he presented it.
"Receive it, Lord," he said, "in earnest of other things that shall be given back. But if I may counsel you in the use of your own, don't use it yet. Be wary. When have I been hasty or unwary, who have waited and prepared for so many years?" asked Aragorn. "Never yet." "Don't then stumble at the end of the road," answered Gandalf, "but at the least keep this thing secret, you and all others that stand here. The hobbit, Peregrine, above all, should not know where it is bestowed. The evil fit may come on him again, for alas, he's handled it and looked in it, as should never have happened. He ought never to have touched it in Isengard, and there I should have been quicker. But my mind was bent on Saruman, and I didn't at once guess the nature of the stone. Then I was weary, and as I lay pondering it, sleep overcame me. Now I know." "Yes, there can be no doubt," said Aragorn. "At last we know the link between Isengard and Mordor, and how it worked. Much is explained." "Strange powers have our enemies, and strange weaknesses," said Theoden. "But it has long been said, oft evil will shall evil mar."
"That many times is seen," said Gandalf. "But at this time we have been strangely fortunate. Maybe I've been saved by this hobbit from a grave blunder. I'd considered whether or not to probe this stone myself to find its uses. Had I done so, I should have been revealed to him myself. I'm not ready for such a trial, if indeed I shall ever be so. But even if I found the power to withdraw myself, it would be disastrous for him to see me. Yet, until the hour comes when secrecy will avail no longer—"
"That hour is now come, I think," said Aragorn.
"Not yet," said Gandalf. "There remains a short while of doubt, which we must use. The enemy, it is clear, thought that the stone was in Orthanc. Why should he not? And that therefore the hobbit was captive there, driven to look in the glass for his torment by Saruman. That dark mind will be filled now with the voice and face of the hobbit and with expectation. It may take some time before he learns his error. We must snatch that time. We've been too leisurely. We must move. The neighbourhood of Isengard is no place to linger in. I will ride ahead at once with Peregrine Took. It will be better for him than lying in the dark while others sleep."
"I will keep Eomer and 10 riders," said the king. "They shall ride with me at early day. The rest may go with Aragorn and ride as soon as they have a mind."
"As you will," said Gandalf. "But make all the speed you may to the cover of the hills, to Helm's Deep."
At that moment a shadow fell over them. The bright moonlight seemed to be suddenly cut off. Several of the riders cried out and crouched, holding their arms above their heads, as if to ward off a blow from above. A blind fear and a deadly cold fell on them. Cowering, they looked up. A vast winged shape passed over the moon like a black cloud. It wheeled and went north, flying at a speed greater than any wind of Middle-earth. The stars fainted before it. It was gone. They stood up, rigid as stones. Gandalf was gazing up, his arms out and downwards, stiff, his hands clenched.
"Nazgul!" he cried. "The messenger of Mordor! The storm is coming! The Nazgul have crossed the river! Ride, ride! Wait not for the dawn! Let not the swift wait for the slow! Ride!"
He sprang away, calling Shadowfax as he ran. Aragorn followed him. Going to Pippin, Gandalf picked him up in his arms. "You shall come with me this time," he said. "Shadowfax shall show you his paces." Then he ran to the place where he had slept. Shadowfax stood there ready. Slinging the small bag, which was all his luggage, across his shoulders, the wizard leapt upon the horse's back. Aragorn lifted Pippin and set him in Gandalf's arms, wrapped in cloak and blanket.
"Farewell! Follow fast!" cried Gandalf. "Away, Shadowfax!"
The great horse tossed his head. His flowing tail flicked in the moonlight. Then he leapt forward, spurning the earth, and was gone like the north wind from the mountains.
"A beautiful, restful night," said Merry to Aragorn. "Some folk have wonderful luck. He didn't want to sleep, and he wanted to ride with Gandalf, and there he goes, instead of being turned into a stone himself to stand here for ever as a warning. If you had been the first to lift the Orthanc stone, and not he, how would it be now?" said Aragorn. "You might have done worse. Who can say? But now it's your luck to come with me, I fear. At once, go and get ready,
and bring anything that Pippin left behind. Make haste." Over the plains Shadowfax was flying, needing no urging and no guidance. Less than an hour had passed, and they had reached the fords of Isen and crossed them. The mound of the riders and its cold spears lay grey behind them.
Pippin was recovering. He was warm, but the wind in his face was keen and refreshing. He was with Gandalf. The horror of the stone and of the hideous shadow over the moon was fading. Things left behind in the mists of the mountains or in a passing dream. He drew a deep breath.
"I didn't know you rode bareback, Gandalf," he said. "You haven't a saddle or a bridle."
"I don't ride elf fashion except on Shadowfax," said Gandalf. "But Shadowfax will have no harness. You don't ride Shadowfax. He's willing to carry you or not." "If he's willing, that's enough. It's then his business to see that you remain on his back unless you jump off into the air."
"How fast is he going?" asked Pippin. "Fast by the wind, but very smooth. And how light his footfalls are."
"He's running now as fast as the swiftest horse could gallop," answered Gandalf. "But that is not fast for him. The land is rising a little here, and is more broken than it was beyond the river. But see how the white mountains are drawing near under the stars. Yonder are the three Heron peaks like black spears. It will not be long before we reach the branching roads and come to the Deeping Combe, where the battle was fought 2 nights ago."
Pippin was silent again for a while. He heard Gandalf singing softly to himself, murmuring brief snatches of rhyme in many tongues as the miles ran under them. At last the wizard passed into a song of which the hobbit caught the words. A few lines came clearly to his ears through the rushing of the wind.
"Tall ships and tall kings, 3 times 3, what brought they from the founded land over the flowing sea? 7 stars and 7 stones, and 1 white tree.
"What are you saying, Gandalf?" asked Pippin.
"I was just running over some of the rhymes of lore in my mind," answered the wizard. "Hobbits, I suppose, have forgotten them, even those that they ever knew."
"No, not all," said Pippin. "And we have many of our own, which wouldn't interest you, perhaps. But I've never heard this one. What is it about, the 7 stars and 7 stones?
"About the palantiri of the kings of old," said Gandalf.
"What are they?"
"The name meant that which looks far away. The Orthanc stone was one."
"Then it was not made, Pippin hesitated, "by the enemy?"
"No," said Gandalf, "nor by Saruman. It's beyond his art, and beyond Sauron's too. The palantiri came from beyond Westernus, from Eldamar. The Noldor made them. Fëanor himself, maybe, wrought them, in days so long ago that the time cannot be measured in years. But there's nothing that Sauron cannot turn to evil uses. Alas for Saruman, it was his downfall, as I now perceive. Perilous to us all are the devices of an art deeper than we possess ourselves. Yet he must bear the blame. Fool to keep it secret for his own profit. No word did he ever speak of it to any of the council. We hadn't yet given thought to the fate of the palantiri of Gondor in its ruinous wars. By men they were almost forgotten. Even in Gondor they were a secret known only to a few. In Arnor they were remembered only in a rhyme of lore among the Dúnedain."
"What did the men of old use them for?" asked Pippin, delighted and astonished at getting answers to so many questions, and wondering how long it would last.
"To see far off, and to converse in thought with one another," said Gandalf. "In that way they long guarded and united the realm of Gondor. They set up stones at Minas Anor, and at Minas Ithil, and at Orthanc in the Ring of Isengard. The chief and master of these was under the dome of Stars of Osgiliath before its ruin. The 3 others were far away in the north. In the house of Elrond, it's told that they were at Annúmenas and Amonsul, and Elendil's stone was on the tower hills that look towards Mithlond in the Gulf of Lune, where the grey ships lie. Each palantir applies to each, but all those in Gondor were ever open to the view of Osgiliath. Now it appears that, as the rock of Orthon